Hey everybody, Ian from the Iron Pig. What's going on, barbecue fans, fans of freedom? What's happening? Let me join in here on Twitter real quick here. Bing bang. All right, welcome everybody on Twitter Spaces. So we're going a couple spaces live tonight. We're live streaming Facebook. Hopefully that's going through. We're also doing a Twitter space and also over on our YouTube channel at Fuelcast TV over there as well. So we decided to put together this little live stream tonight to go over a couple of things that have been going on, mainly out there in the public. The Iron Pig, I've also filed a lawsuit 2 weeks ago, August 10th, against our local health department. So we'll discuss that really briefly because that really plays into exactly what this live stream is about tonight. There's also been a lot of talk in the media about new mask mandates and some other things that, you know, a private university is doing, a film company in California is doing. TSA may or may not be coming out with some new mask mandates. So we thought it was an appropriate time to put together what we know and what I know from our experience dealing with the governor, as you can see, wherever she is right there, the attorney general, the state health department, and our local health department, now that we've engaged with this local lawsuit as well. So there's a couple of things. I've got some notes. I'm going to try and get this in as quick as we can. I've been going out to, you know, a couple of school board meetings and city council meetings, commissioner meetings, and kind of trying to briefly explain exactly what Iron Pig has been up to and what this lawsuit means. And to clear the air, you know, it's not retribution, it's not retaliation. Simply what we're actually doing is going after a couple of additional statutes that Judge Hunter, who gave us our ruling here in 46th Circuit Court back in January of 2022, he pointed out a couple of additional statutes that may suffer from some of these same things. Let me see if this might help here, get this mic over here. Maybe that helps a little bit. So, kind of a couple of things I wanted to point out. Our new lawsuit is not trying to attack our local health department. We believe a lot of things they do are spectacular. The people that work there are wonderful people. We've never had any kind of issues with them whatsoever, either as well. So, trying to get tuned in here on Twitter Spaces as well. If anybody's paying attention there, welcoming everybody there. You know, obviously, I'm not a public health official. Everybody out there listening right now should be taking their doctor's health advice on all of these things that are coming down the pipe as far as vaccines and masks and any of this stupid stuff. That's really not what this is about. I've always believed that it's a personal decision for you to wear a mask, not wear a mask. That's simply what we provided during the shutdown was the availability for anybody that felt safe in doing so to come into the restaurant. We never drug anybody into the restaurant to try and eat our barbecue during the shutdown. So I'm also not an attorney. Although I've been a part of legal action against several state officials and state agencies for the nearly last 3 years, I do have a good layman's understanding of exactly what's going on. So hopefully that will translate into some of this stuff that I'm going to throw out there tonight. The other thing, too, is that a lot of the stuff that we discuss is based on case precedents that's been happening over the last couple of years, beginning with INRI certified questions from October of 22, which will get brought up. You know, anybody that's read through that knows what's going on. The term's non-delegation. You know, if anybody's out there drinking, we can play a drinking game, and anytime we say either non-delegation or 2253, have a shot. Things like Herman Gundy versus the United States, that's a Supreme Court level decision, says a lot of the same things that we're going to talk about here tonight. There's another Supreme Court level decision, the EPA, West Virginia versus EPA, that came out, I think, in 2021 or 2022. T&V Associates, which we've talked a lot about before. We try and relay this stuff as well. These are kind of our cohorts in arms. They had a lawsuit against 2253, just like we did. Take a shot. So this is a published case now that is very important that we're going to bring up here in a little bit as well. So you know, what do I know? I know a little bit about some barbecue. We've been in this business for about 6 years now. So the legal stuff I know a little bit about. I have a wonderful attorney that breaks things down for me in very, very simple terms, we always joke about, so we can have the guy on the other side of the bar understand exactly what's going on. Pardon me for a second here while I move some things around. I want to get the chat involved here too, because we've got some questions coming in. So try and get those addressed here. Like I said, we're going to try and get this done before 9 o'clock, not make this too long. So that's what I know. I know barbecue. I know a little bit about these cases, and I obviously know what we've been through litigating all of these statutes, five different attorney generals, five different government agencies, a court out of Lansing, one contempt of court in my favor, a liquor license suspended for 90 days, a food suspension for 14 days, all based on a public health law that is now unconstitutional, that stood on the back of an Emergency Powers Act that was also ruled unconstitutional. So we're slowly making our way down the tracks. So to say the least, I have a little bit of experience in these things, but I'm not pretending to be a public health official, not whatsoever. I'm not pretending to be a lawyer whatsoever, although I do have fantastic counsel. Shout out to David Delaney. So let's take a really quick background look at what's been going on since March 10th of 2022. I'm going to try and ramble through this stuff as quick as I can. If anybody wants to, at ironpigsmoke.com is the latest filing that gives out 170 paragraphs of all fact that has happened throughout our case since the fall of 2020. So I'm going to try and ramble through a couple of these things real quick. So that is available for download on our website, right at the front page right there. So March 10th, 2020, the first stay home, stay safe order. I kind of have a shitty grin on my face when I say that, because we know how that turned out. That was the first executive order. So then let me turn to this indictment, as I like to call it. March 10th, stay home, stay safe. That was the Emergency Powers of the Governor Act. Those were all the executive orders throughout the springtime that were used to do all kinds of crazy stuff. You couldn't take boats out, you couldn't get paint, you know, all the crazy things that people remember and still talk about to this day. So let's fast forward to the fall. So what ends up happening is there's a couple of lawsuits that come around. Everybody remembers Carl the Barber, and then there's Midwest Health that came about in recertified questions. So that got kicked to the federal level. And then it got turned around and kicked back as a state's rights issue, and was our state Supreme Court was said, hey, you know, this is something you guys need to look at. So October 2nd of 2020, Michigan Supreme Court determined that the executive branch should not possess authority to issue emergency public health orders under the EPGA of 1945, MCL 10.31. Because that act is an unlawful delegation of legislative power to the executive branch, in violation of Michigan's Constitution. So I jokingly say, you know, we're going back to simple civics from fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, where there's three but separate equal branches of government. One shouldn't be doing the job of the other, right? That's pretty simple stuff. Three equal portions of the pie, right? Pretty simple stuff. What they were saying was that the executive branch took too much power and gave it to the legislative branch through the EPGA. It was unconstitutional. So that was October 2nd. 3 days later, the executive branch, through the state director of the Michigan Health Department of Human Services, MDHHS, issues emergency public health orders under the Michigan Public Health Code. Michigan Public Health Code is divided into two articles. Article 2 governs administration. We don't really care about a whole lot of that. Really, what it's just talking about is state versus local, which is important when we get towards the end of this thing. On November 15th, opening day of deer season, for those of us folks up north that depend on deer season and the tourist traffic from deer season, a lot of people don't remember that second shutdown for us happened on the opening day of deer season. 15th, opening day of deer season, emergency orders under MCL 333.2253, take a shot. Closing indoor dining. Fast forward, November 24th. I call the Health Department of Northwest Michigan, speak to one of our local sanitarians, Holly, who's absolutely amazing, probably one of the best health inspectors we've ever had to deal with, and tell them that I'm going to remain open. Now, the following day, the day before Thanksgiving, November 25th, Health Department of Northwest Michigan comes in and issues me an order to cease and desist. And this actually was improperly formatted as it had another one of our food licenses on it as well, and they were not open as a coffee shop that no longer exists down the street. This cease and desist is important because it also cites MCL 333.2451, 2453, which are some local statutes that mirror the state versions. That is kind of the crux of our new lawsuit that we filed on August 10th. So we're looking at the local health director's authority to do what was unconstitutional at the state level. We're looking to have the same ruling as on that and four other statutes as well. We'll get to that here in a second. Let's fast forward. November 25th, Iron Pig defies the order allowing the gathering of people. That's important because that's what 2253 actually states. And I may have it sitting here somewhere because it's very, very simple. Emergency Powers of the Governor Act was at least, I think, 30 pages long or something like that. So the language that was at dispute was prohibit the gathering of people for any purpose and may establish procedures to follow during the epidemic to ensure continuation of essential public health. So we now know that was used to restrict dining, capacity restrictions on a lot of businesses in your homes during Thanksgiving. You're supposed to stick to your pods, sign-in sheets, curfews, all of those things. So on November 30th, I get a MyOSHA, Michigan Occupational Safety and Health Administration. I get a notification from them about a complaint that was filed about employees not following some of the mandates. That was based on 2253. December 2nd, we get a notice from the Liquor Commission coming in without a notice, without hearing. They come in and take my liquor license off the wall. Actually, they took the expired one off the wall because the other one was at the other end. The video for that is actually on our YouTube channel as well. So they come in, they do that. December 14th, resulting from that, a hearing regarding Iron Pig's liquor license, the executive branch administrative law, that's important to know, administrative law judge from the executive branch liquor commission found that the Iron Pig engaged in illegal acts and disregarding the emergency order and is an imminent threat to the public's health, safety, and welfare. And I put those in quotations, not to be snarky, but because that is kind of what we're talking about, is some of this really ambiguous language, limit the gathering of people, imminent threat, health, safety, welfare, some of those things. It's worth noting that the administrative law judge actually mocked me in that hearing. You know, we've got a slogan that's risk it for the brisket. He said more like brisket to die for, which, you know, it's not a bad slogan either, but given, you know, we try and figure out where he was going with that. So, by the way, it's worth noting, nobody died at the Iron Pig. And you'll see, find out here later on in this thing, the health department actually admits to there was never any contact tracing, COVID trace to the Iron Pig, period. The liquor license was suspended for 90 days. This was the longest liquor suspension of anybody in the state. And then that was done for a reason. What we're trying to cast some light on this whole thing is the veracity that they used all of these different departments against us to try and get us to fall into compliance, because that's really what it was, is getting us to comply. And they even said so. We're at December 29th. Without notice or hearing, the Department of Agriculture and Rural Department, MDARD, suspended our food license on January 14th. Hearing regarding Iron Pig's food license suspension conceded there was never any cases of COVID-19 at the Iron Pig. January 27th. MDARD commenced legal proceedings against the Iron Pig in Ingham County Circuit Court and obtained an ex parte temporary restraining order to shutter the restaurant. MDARD sent an undercover employee that same day, actually that afternoon. February 4th, I was threatened with jail. and held in contempt of court and fined. MDHHS filed an administrative proceeding against the Iron Pig. MDHHS filed a motion for summary disposition requesting a ruling the Iron Pig violated the emergency order. Following a brief telephone hearing, I'm not kidding you, it was probably 10 minutes. You know, the least amount of due process we've had in this entire thing. I think it was maybe April of 2022, I believe. An administrative law judge entered an order finding that the MDHHS order was issued and in effect and relevant at all times, with nothing to suggest that it was valid. I'm sorry, this was probably April of 2021. May 16th, 2021, Iron Pig filed an administrative appeal from that hearing that allowed us to get into Otsego County Circuit Court via Administrative Procedures Act. January 13th, we're going to jump ahead. This is how long it takes to brief and go back and forth. January 13th, 2022. Circuit Court Judge Colin Hunter ruled that 2253 under Article 2, Section 2 of the Michigan Constitution is clearly an unconstitutional delegation of power from the legislative to the executive branch, right? That's where we're saying legislative gave too much power to the executive. The executive took it and proudly wrote their own law and enforced it. That, by definition, is tyranny. I know some people want to cringe when you hear that word, but that is the definition of tyranny. So, January 13th, the court found there is nothing within the sole standard of necessary that serves in any realistic way to guide the health director's exercise of discretion under the statute or channel or check that power outside the health director's own finding. And it's worth noting, health directors at the state level and at the local level are appointed by, at the local level, it is a board of health for us and the health department of Northwest Michigan. We have four counties that they cover. Two county commissioners from each serve on a board. They then hire a health director. I believe Dan Thorell is our local health director. I don't think I know Dan. I'm sure he's a really nice guy. They do really good work over there. Again, I have no issue with the health department. It's just these laws that they have access to be able to do things like unilaterally put masks on students like they did, that then caused a lawsuit to be brought about, Let Them Breathe versus Gaylord Community Schools and the Health Department of Northwest Michigan. I believe that litigation is ongoing, and I believe it is going to the next level in that, which might be the Michigan Supreme Court. We don't even have time to get into that one, but that is a very, very, very important case as well. So January 20th, MDHS files a motion for a stay of Judge Hunter's ruling. That stay was not granted. Stay just means we're going to hold off until this is effectual, basically, is my understanding of what that means. February 3rd, a few weeks later, an application for leave to appeal was filed. So what that means is they want to leave the Court of Appeals. They want to leave and they want to go to the Court of Appeals to have a three-judge panel at the Court of Appeals, which is a next level up. So we've got two courts of equity or Court of Appeals, where T&V that I referenced earlier, and then we've got our circuit court where Judge Hunter gave us our ruling. So the next step up would be Court of Appeals, and above that would be Michigan Supreme Court. So then the next day, so that's February 3rd, February 4th, they do what's called a bypass application, which means they seek to jump over that next step of the Court of Appeals, that application they filed the day before on the 3rd. The next day they said, no, we want to go one step up. This is such an important issue. We want to take this to the next level and have them decide it because it's so important. We don't think that there's time. We're worried the way that the Iron Pig is representing this ruling. We also want to use this ruling to amend and institute some nursing home restrictions and stuff, which they ended up doing December of 2022. So we got the bypass application. April 1st, Michigan Supreme Court denies the bypass application, stating that if the Court of Appeals should do so, they should look at it first. Two judges did dissent, that one liberal and one conservative judge. One each both said, we would take this now. We do feel like this is a very important issue that needs answering, especially since there is a contradicting ruling coming out of the Court of Claims, that Court of Equity. So we got Judge Hunter with an unconstitutional ruling, and then over in the court of claims, which we've tried to avoid from day one for obvious reasons, Judge Shapiro over there said, nope, it's constitutional because it contains the word epidemic. Put a pin in that. So, yeah, we're talking about April 1st, blah, blah, blah. I won't bore you with the dissent on that, although it is very, very important. May 5th, here we go. Judge Shapiro in the Court of Claims action determined that the delegation of legislative power to the executive branch in 2253, take a shot, is constitutional. And the issue's not moot, which that's important for other things down the road. For the legal nerds, that is important. Mootness is very important to this case, to the Let Them Breathe case, and a couple of others that are hanging out there. Although the Otsego County Court had struck down 2253, take a shot, as unconstitutional in January 22, the Liquor Commission, after the May 22 Court of Claims decision, finding 2253 is constitutional, they did continue to come after me for additional violations that they were trying to get me in. So December 2nd or whatever, they came in. So then they came in a month later. Even though we weren't serving alcohol, we were still open under the health law. Even though we weren't still serving alcohol, they tried to get me again. So they kind of held that over my head in abeyance. I couldn't get any more applications, permits, anything like that. I couldn't transfer my liquor license. I couldn't do any of that kind of stuff. Because they had this stuff just kind of, they kept kicking down the field a little bit because they could. So here we go, January 8th, 2022, TNV files an appeal in the Court of Appeals. June 16th, 2022, Health Department files a letter in our case with the Court of Appeals citing the TNV constitutional ruling. Of course, they're going to say that. July 20th, 22, Court of Appeals takes their application to overturn Judge Hunter's ruling. It's the easiest way to say that. September 19th, Court of Appeals and TNV decisions denied a motion. That's kind of nerdy stuff. We don't even need to get into that. November 9th, 2022, the Iron Pig files its brief in a TNV opinion, citing TNV. I'm sorry, the Health Department files the brief citing the constitutional ruling from Shapiro, of course. That's November 23rd. So the premise of the Health Department motion for for voluntary dismissal of our appeal. So they file a motion the day before Thanksgiving, almost 2 years after this whole nonsense has started, dismissing their appeal because they got a win over in this other court. Judge Hunter, unconstitutional. Judge Shapiro, Court of Claims, constitutional. So they said, boy, we can give up this Iron Pig thing over here. We don't even need to get into that. We can't have this non-delegation stuff take a shot. Get even into the conversation. So they put all their nuts over in, sorry, I can't laugh when I have to laugh when I say that. They put all their nuts over into that basket with TNV, with Judge Shapiro's ruling. So TNV ends up filing an appeal to go up to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals, December 12th, dismisses the Iron Pig appeal because the Health Department gives it up because they have the other win. December 15th, Court of Appeals, a published ruling that under the Public Health Code, an elected official, officer, employee may issue a public health orders without approval of the elected local board. That is an important case. Flynn v. Ottawa, for the health nerds that might be, health nerds, my goodness, the law nerds, I doubt there are many law health nerds that are listening. Any of the law nerds, that's an important case. That's number 359774. It is cited in this case. The Flynn decision cited 2453, which is one that we are taking issue with, 2451, which is another one, as authority for the unelected local health officer employee to issue a mask mandate as an emergency public health order without approval of the elected board. I don't want to get too far into this, but this is an interesting case that ends up going in the other direction and has significant impact on a lot of these cases, our case, TNV, and a lot of these other school mask mandates with regarding to mootness. And again, I'm boring you enough with all this history that I'm throwing at you with all this crap. Judge Hunter, here's important. Judge Hunter had foreshadowed that some or all of the various statutes within the broad public health code may ultimately be determined to suffer from the same fatal delegation flaws as 2253. The court did cite 2453, 2455, 5201, governing communicable diseases, the court stated that this is not an exhaustive list. So in our case, we cite five statutes. 2453 is the first one that seeks to remove the exact same ruling that Judge Hunter ruled on back in January of 2022. June 29, 2023. So we're going to now fast forward to this summer. People are still saying, why are you talking about this? Why are you bringing this up again? This is so 3 years ago, blah, 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 whatever. Well, it's not. There are so many decisions, and this is a very, very recent one. June 29, 2023. We've talked about this before if you're paying attention. In a published decision, that's important. That sets precedent is published. The Michigan Court of Appeals decided the TNV case. The court struck down 2253 as an unconstitutional delegation of legislative authority to the executive branch in violation of the separation of powers in Article 3, Section 2 of the Michigan Constitution. That's very, very important. That is simply where we're talking about the three separate but equal branches. And then Articles 4, 5, and 6 go on to enumerate what those duties are, if you will. Don't laugh because I said duties. I know you will. The court found the issue was not moot and that an actual case in controversy exists since the health department disputes that 2253 is unconstitutional. This is why I didn't want to get into the mumbo jumbo of mootness, because ultimately they found that it wasn't moot anyway, which is a big deal. The court determined that the health department's exercise of authority under 2253 is an issue of public significance, as a couple of the Supreme Court justices pointed out in the denial of our appeal. So here we sit. It's important to point out that Judge Hunter found the word epidemic that remains undefined. He also determined that the clear point is that the unexercised but available use of the director's authority could conceivably reach and affect each and every political, social, moral, and societal problem if only the director determines that the concern can now be categorized as an epidemic. And rightfully so, he did, and then TNV expanded on it, that 2253 does not define what an epidemic is. In the field of public health, the term epidemic is not restricted to disease. An epidemic includes obesity, opioid overdose, tobacco, and the greatest threat to public health is loneliness. The CDC says that. So that's what we're looking at, is how this language has been used and manipulated to do things that back in 1978, I think when this health law was first enacted, wasn't necessarily intended to do. And now it clearly is a violation of the non-delegation doctrine, which is something that we can't even get into because we start to have a look at that later on down the line. So that's where we're at going back to all now. So now we're taking a look at the local statutes, the local health director's authority to do all of those things that they can see fit as long as they determine that there is an epidemic, right? Before 2020, none of us would ever have considered that the state health director or even a local health director would do any of these things, right? So this is where we're at now. They took the power and they didn't want to give it back. We had to go to the judicial branch to get them to give it back because it's unconstitutional what they were doing with it. Two times now. So here we have all this. Let me get to my notes real quick. Okay. So there's some history and some of the crucial cases and issues that bring us to where we are today. So really what we're talking about is what happens next, right? Everybody is seeing the mumbo jumbo that's going around on the internet, new mask mandates or new social distancing requirements, all this stuff that's happening. I don't think anything in Michigan is happening. I do know that there are a couple of cases that have been reported with the new, whatever they're calling it, Aris strain or variant or whatever we're calling it. Again, I'm not a health expert, but it is around. So there is some worry, and I can kind of understand why people are concerned. Hence, why we're kind of putting this together now. So people understand who has the authority to issue any kind of strict mandates, any kind of new rules, any kind of new lockdown stuff, if we want to use that term, which I know a lot of people want to throw up in their mouth when they say that. So we first look at the EPGA 1945. Hopefully you can see that. Reasonable and necessary was the language. The governor can make laws, I'm paraphrasing, as long as they're reasonable and necessary to control the epidemic, basically is what that said. Unconstitutional. That was in recertified questions. 2253, prohibit the gathering of people and may establish procedures for any reason. That one is now gone too. So what a lot of people don't know is since March 10th, the governor had issued orders under three different levers, if you will. First was the EPGA, right? 1945, that was a riot control act that had the most authority to it, if you will, the most power. That's, of course, why she went to it first. Then they also issued some health mandates, mainly towards some of the nursing home stuff. That was really the bulk of the emergency orders, right? So we're distinguishing between executive orders, emergency orders, which neither one of them are constitutional now. And then she also issued some things under the Emergency Management Act, which is intact today. And this is what I have argued from the beginning, was this is what was the proper way for our government to function. Now, there are a few issues that I do have with this, but by and large, this keeps a lot of things intact. Again, there is an argument to make that it even is also unconstitutional, but I think it's fair to say that in times of great need and great emergency, the Emergency Management Act has its place. Those of us up north here, we see the EMA used nearly every winter. When we have a winter storm warning, when we have the state police come out and say I-75 is closed, or you should stay home because the roads are so bad, we're not putting the plows out, those kinds of things. Usually they don't last for, you know, a few hours or 24 hours, or those kinds of things. But it gives the state emergency manager certain powers, and it gives the local emergency managers powers. And so it even goes on to define this Emergency Management Act, and I've got it sitting here somewhere. Let me dig through. So this actually, the Emergency Management Act came out two, or was passed 2 years before, so 1976, I think, Act 390, 1976. An act to provide for planning, mitigation, response, and recovery from natural and human-made disaster within and outside the state, to create the Michigan Emergency Management Advisory Council and prescribe its powers and duties, to prescribe the powers and duties of certain state and local agencies and officials, to prescribe immunities and liabilities, to provide for the acceptance of gifts, and to repeal the acts and parts of this. So this is what I am advising every local municipality that has emergency powers, right? So for example, I went to our county commissioners the other day, and we've got some great, great county commissioners. And what I said to them is, this is what we're gonna be relying on from now. You know, do we have an emergency management director or supervisor, whatever you need to call it? And we don't necessarily have a specified one. So what this actually states is that falls onto the chairperson of our county commissioners, which is a good guy. I know him pretty well. So it's now going to be on him to either take on that duty, and it is his duty as it stands right now, but they also have the power to appoint an emergency management director, supervisor, whatever they want to call it. And this could be a person that has experience in this. It could be they can even create a panel that then appoints such a person. But the point is that it gives you a lot of levers to pull in order to appoint a person to make these decisions. Now, at the state level, there is this emergency supervisory council or whatever they're calling it. So that person then becomes the governor, if you will, that's going to be issuing these new rules, these new mandates, whatever they happen to be, and they can get very local. They can go into a certain region, they can go into certain counties, and they can say a number of things. They can actually say, you know, warnings, and then they can go to mandates, which is even better, right? They can say, this is a problematic area, you know, so let's use COVID, since we have obvious examples of that. Otsego County had always been sort of a hotbed, if you will. We are a crossroads town, M32 and I-75, so there are a lot of transient visitors to our area. So that contributed to, and this is not me, this is the health department that says this, that contributed to our numbers being higher. It wasn't the Iron Pig being open, by the way. So the state level could come in and say, boy, you know, you guys have a real issue here. You need to take control of it. In the meantime, we're going to issue kind of a warning before we issue state mandated areas for Otsego County or our four county area, whatever it happens to be. The important thing that I've been pointing out, that what makes this sort of a legal delegation of authority, which we'll later argue that there is no such thing, because the vesting clauses in Articles 4, 5, and 6 of the Michigan Constitution don't allow any delegation, even though this Emergency Management Act allows for delegation of a lot of authority. There are a lot of checks on this authority. And a lot of people that are listening probably right now aren't going to love the answer to this, but had the governor followed the Emergency Management Act the first time, the results might be a little bit different. And that, of course, is speculation, because we don't really know how that would have turned out. But the point being is, there are 28 days. So if the state emergency management supervisor director, Graham Poobah, decides that COVID is surging in Otsego County or any counties, a region in the area, he or she, it's worth trying to track down who this person might currently be. They are going to be the ones that legally are going to be responsible for, at the state level, issuing any kind of mandates or any kind of procedures that they feel might mitigate, you know, a surge in a new variant of COVID or something else. You know, a lot of people have speculated, you know, there might be some climate things that they might try and use these. That is really far-fetched, especially seeing how people are reacting to just the thought, potentially, of new mandates coming, just the mask portion of it alone. And again, I'm not anti-mask. I don't care. I could care less. If you want to wear a mask, great. If you don't want to wear a mask, fine. I've never ridiculed anybody. I'm not a maskhole. I'm not about to start. And the same with the vaccine. I don't care. I can't believe I even have to say that. I don't even know why I am, but it's your choice. I'm a libertarian. You do you. I'm going to do me. I'm not going to require that you do anything for me. I take my health responsibly my way. That's been our stance from the beginning, and that's what I said to our employees when we decided to stay open, and when even back in March when the first mandates came down, if you want to stay home, take your unemployment, you always have a spot here. Please don't think that any of that. So the 28-day marker is what makes the Emergency Management Act feasible. And it has so many levers for the state and for the local, but it goes beyond that. It gives property rights in here. I've got a couple things highlighted. An executive order proclamation shall be disseminated properly by means calculated to bring its contents to the attention of the general public. That really should say, basically, you need to be notified about this in an official capacity, is really what that needs to say. Some things they do say: additional powers of the governor. In addition to the general authority granted to the governor by this act, the governor may, upon the declaration of a state of disaster or a state of emergency, do one or more of the following: suspend a regulatory statute. If there's any portion of this that is questionable about a violation of the vesting clauses, this may be a portion of it. So suspend a regulatory statute, order, or rule prescribing the procedures for conduct of state business when strict compliance with a state order or rule would prevent, hinder, or delay necessary action in coping with a disaster emergency. This power does not extend to the suspension of criminal process and procedures. I think that's worthy of noting, because I feel like that is saying that your due process is not being suspended just because we've issued an emergency management mandate may be the best way to say these things moving forward, since there's executive orders, there's emergency orders. These will probably still be emergency orders anyways. This is interesting. When you get down here, there's a bunch of these J they go through. So here's H. Suspend or limit the sale, dispensing, or transportation of alcoholic beverages, explosives, and combustibles. Then it goes on to enumerate number 2, subsection 1, does not authorize the seizure, taking, or confiscation of lawfully possessed firearms or ammunition. Now, I know a lot of our fans listening are big Second Amendment fans, so just know that the Emergency Management Act doesn't authorize the seizure of firearms under the Emergency Management Act. That's worth noting. I like that they do spell it out here. I find it interesting that they're limiting the sale of alcoholic beverages, comma, explosives, comma, combustibles. So you can kind of see where this was probably created around some rioting and some other stuff that was going on when this was passed. So they can definitely limit the sale of alcohol and explosives. Sorry, guys, you can't get your explosives if there's an emergency determined. Compensation for property shall be paid only if the property is taken or otherwise used in coping with the disaster or emergency, and its use or destruction is ordered by the governor or the director. A person claiming compensation for the use, damage, loss, or construction of property under this act shall file a claim with the Emergency Management Division of the department in the form and manner prescribed by the division. This is a very interesting portion that they put in here, because this is kind of some property rights stuff. So this says just because the EMA has issued these things, you still have some levers for property rights and some other things. So this is a very interesting thing, and I will put a pin on this, and we'll come back, not tonight, and talk about this, but this is something that's very interesting, considering NRE certified questions here says that she violated the governor violated the Emergency Management Act because the legislature didn't renew it. So that's a big thing. If I didn't say the 28 days, they have to have it renewed by the legislature. So when I said there's a portion of you that may not really like this part of it, the emergency management director can issue basically any kind of mandate if there's an emergency determined for 28 days. They can close I-75 if there is a snowstorm for 28 days, but they've got to go back and get the legislature's permission for another, whatever it is, 15 days to slow the curve, or 3 weeks, or whatever it is, but they can't go any more than 28. So it's 28 day tranches. And that's what the legislature denied her back in April, the end of April, 2020. They said, no, we will not reauthorize the Emergency Management Act. And in my opinion, they were right to do so. But of course, I wasn't paying attention to that at that time. We were complying like everybody else, doing takeout, blah, blah, blah. None of this stuff was even any close to our radar whatsoever. So there were a few people ahead of us on a lot of these things. So we're kind of standing on the shoulders of giants. But that's an interesting thing to think about, is property rights in that. Powers and duties of the director. The director shall comply with the applicable provisions of the Michigan Emergency Management Plan. So this is where we need to start inquiring about what is the Michigan Emergency Management Plan when it comes to transmissible, communicable diseases publicly, how they should be expected to handle that. And that's where we need to kind of hone in over time, exactly what that looks like and what that plan is. There already is a plan. We need to look at that plan and see if there are any provisions and or if it needs to be updated to make sure that it is falling in line with the separation of powers and the vesting clauses in 4, 5, and 6 of the Michigan Constitution. So move on from that. There's a whole lot of things that this goes through that it says that it may do. It'll promulgate rules. for standards, for training of emergency management coordinators, so we don't just get any Joe Schmo off the street that wants to, you know, take over this position for whatever reason, whether nefarious or not. We want to make sure that this is a person that has had some form of proper training when it comes to, in my opinion, engaging in the various governments that know what's going on. In my opinion, at our local level, our chairperson of the county commissioners should be engaging with Dan Thorell, our local health department. We have one of the posts for the state police is right here in Gaylord as well. He should be coordinating with these department official heads, coming up with the best idea by consensus. And then it is that chairperson or that emergency management director's job to issue whatever is appropriate, whether that is if they feel like a masking mandate or if they feel like social distancing or a curfew. We go back to the use of, you know, snowstorms and stuff like that. They use the Emergency Management Act locally when we had our tornado disaster here in 2022. The governor flew in, did her circle around, landed, signed some things for that, and took back off. We're grateful for that support in that regard. That's exactly what the Emergency Management Act was designed to do. And it does enumerate further in here that there are access to funds and other things to help mitigate disasters and stuff like that. So again, there are a lot of things that this Emergency Management Act does. It goes on to further talk about, here it is, the County Board of Commissioners of each county shall appoint emergency management coordinator. In the absence of an appointed person, the emergency management coordinator shall be the chairperson of the County Board of Commissioners. We've got a pretty good one here. He's a pretty level-headed fella, and I think he's a consensus guy, and he would get out there, and he would definitely figure out what the best way to move forward is. What else have we got? Powers, county municipalities, each county municipality has appointed emergency coordinator. Yeah. So again, there's local plans that can be established in coordination with appropriate federal and state agencies. The authority to declare a local and state emergency, provide for the health and safety of persons and property. So it does specifically enumerate health in there. It's important to point that out. And of course, appoint a local emergency management advisory council. Again, that's where I go back to, you know, not just one person, but, you know, a conglomerate of people that have expertise in various areas. I don't pretend to be an expertise. I just know what experience I have. Digging through all this nonsense, you probably didn't see all the tab notes and highlights in this nonsense, but this is kind of the stuff that we've been poring over in the last couple of years. If a disaster or an emergency occurs in a county that's beyond the control of local private agencies, this is important. The chief executive official may request the governor to declare a state disaster. So if for some reason we have a derelict state government that isn't paying attention, right? This isn't about politics. We've got to remove all the emotion of COVID, and we've got to remove all the ridiculousness of politics about this, because it's about power. It's about the availability of power and the abuse of that availability of that power and then not relenting it back. So we're just basically putting them in check using the judicial branch in our due process going through that. So in doing so, if we have a rise in cases here and we need the state to help us control whatever is happening here. Let's say that we're buried in, like, has it happened during Christmas of this last year, and we're stuck. You know, the plows are literally stuck in the thing. We can call up the governor and the emergency managers and say, listen, we need some help from Crawford County or all the way downstate. Please bring us as many snow plows and shovels as you can and all the road salt you can. So it's basically access for us to go up and say, we need some help. Can you help us? Again, they do a pretty good job of enumerating a lot of things that you can and cannot do. Levers of government that get enacted. You know, the part about issuing a state of alert, a heightened state of alert, which is kind of a warning, they can do that for 60 days. That's important. That's, you know, if there's a rise in COVID right now, the state can come in and what they first should do is there's a heightened state of alert in Otsego County or Mount Morenci County or Antrim or wherever it happens to be. They can say and let people know, kind of like a weather warning, listen, that this is an area that is a hotbed for this, that, or the other, whatever it happens to be. You know, the forest fires that have been blanketing us lately, they've been issuing these warnings about the air quality index and some of that stuff. This would be kind of the same lever, you know, for 60 days, they can say, hey, this is a heightened awareness. Again, they can do that for 60 days. That doesn't fall under that 28-day limit. 60 days, they can say, we need to be careful of this. And again, this is not the entirety of it. This is what I thought was really important in the Emergency Management Act that to this day stands. 1976 was when that was passed. So there are ways. So if they do decide that COVID runs rampant again, there is the possibility to be able to put into effect some kind of mandates. And it doesn't necessarily write and spell out in that Emergency Management Act what they are, but at least there is a democratic way to go back and engage our legislators and say, listen, this has gotten out of hand. You can write, you can call, you can protest peacefully, you can do all of those things to let your legislators know. And anybody that's paying attention to politics in Michigan knows right now that, you know, the Democrats do, whether you're Democrat or Republican. I'm libertarian, so I don't necessarily take a side, even though I've been pigeonholed to one side, which is, that's fine. That's somebody else's problem. I sit in a position, not necessarily in the middle, but in the middle, speaking in terms of I get to kind of poke at either side, because in my opinion, both let us restaurants down and let us, the voters and the taxpayers and the citizens of Michigan down by not doing a lot of these things within reason. You know, you can talk about the science, we can talk about some of the stuff in post haste that we know now, because hindsight is 20/20, but really what it comes down to is if something happens again, right now, at this point, local health directors do have the authority to issue their own guidelines, their own mandates, promulgate their own rules, whatever they want to do. They can put masks on kids in any county that a health director, a local health director oversees. The state health director is out of luck. 2253 is gone. It's published opinion. It's now unconstitutional. So they would either turn to the local health directors to implement a statewide, whatever they wanted, or put pressure on local health directors. I don't even know what that would look like. But the lawful way to do it moving forward is using the Emergency Management Act. Now, again, that may not make a lot of conservatives real happy considering the state that our legislature is in. And by state, I mean that they control all levers of government. So if the governor went back and requested another 28 days, that's what we would be looking at, is engaging our state reps and our state senators and saying, we have a problem with X, Y, Z, and you organize and you figure out a way to explain that to them. You organize and you figure out a way to go to local county commissioners and make sure that they're on the same page with their emergency action plans. And these are people that know better. When I went the other day, they received me very well, and they did know exactly what was going on. But I just simply wanted them to know that, you know, whatever does happen with our case moving forward in these other cases, it's the Emergency Management Act that really has precedent. And if you want to do things in a way that keeps you litigious free, let's be honest, because there are people that are standing up and that are taking action against a lot of these state agencies. There are a lot of other lawsuits that are still lying in wait out there. I know there is one against Myosha that is hanging in Alpena. There's a couple of school mask mandates that are still moving through, maybe one in Kalamazoo, Comstock area. And of course, we have the Let Them Breathe lawsuit out there as well. So again, I just I just want to try and get this information out there. I want to make sure that, you know, we're on record as we're not trying to harm our local health department's ability to do any of the really good work that they do. I don't have a lot of issue with the majority of the things that they do. Like I said, our sanitarians are some of the best that I've got to work with in my roughly 15 years of having health inspections through my various jobs. So it's certainly not about them. It's certainly not about COVID. It's not any of that stuff. It's about the separation of powers. It's about the law. We look about how we go about removing the emotion from all of this stuff. We've never tried to argue the science with any of this stuff. And I'll tell you, moving forward, it's going to be really interesting to see what our Michigan Supreme Court does with the TNV Associates case that is coming up on appeal. We just got the health department's brief side on that. It looks so ridiculous. I'm having a hard time even getting through with it without falling asleep. But our Michigan Supreme Court is going to have a very hard time overturning themselves from a ruling, their own ruling from 2023. Whenever that does, it probably won't end up on their docket by the end of this year. I don't see that happening. But you never know. Things do change awfully fast. So we're keeping an eye on a couple of these other cases. With regards to our case, it was filed August 10th. Health Department has 21 days to respond. The only response that I have heard is through a news article in which the local health director, Dan Thorell, again, probably a really nice guy. I don't know him. He probably does a wonderful job. Again, I don't know him, and this is not about him. His comments were something to the effect of being disappointed that we brought this suit. Because the funds that could be used to defend this action could be used in place of some of the other good work that that department does. And of course, I can't really necessarily disagree with that, except for the part where, and it's hard to say this without kind of like being na-na-na-na-boo-boo or anything like that, but I mean, they started it. They came in here, they issued me a cease and desist. I called them a day ahead to engage them in a conversation about how to avoid any of that. But ultimately, this is where it has ended up. And again, this is not us trying to go after them. This is not us trying to get retribution on the state or anything like that. This is us merely following up what is in the footnotes of our lawsuit. Judge Hunter plainly states that there are several other statutes that are going to suffer this same fatality as 2253. Take a shot. So, yeah, what time have we got? Boy, we're coming up on 9 o'clock here pretty quick. So I'm sure some of you are probably getting ready to tune out. I'm sure some of you are probably going to try and maybe watch the Fox News debate. That ought to be awfully interesting. We'll probably have some comments to say about that on our YouTube channel. FuelcastTV.com is where we do our podcast, where we talk a lot about this stuff and some other things as well that are going on nationally and even here in Northern Michigan as well. So let me check in here. I hope I did a good enough job. You know, the beginning of that is just rambling on a whole bunch of nonsense. Again, our whole, as I like to call it, affidavit is available at ironpigsmoke.com. The PDF is available for download right there. Anybody can always hit us up with any questions that they have regarding this, pertaining to this. Anybody that wants to get out there and engage their local county commissioners, or, I mean, it goes further than that, right? So you can go down to village, you can go down to city council. It really breaks down the various municipalities that have access to the Emergency Management Act. So get out there. If anybody has questions on how to do so, all of this stuff that I read off today is all available on the my.gov website. Again, it's the Emergency Management Act that you want to read through. It's not too terribly long, but it is what is should be used moving forward. There is no EPGA. There is no health law that can be stood on. Even though a local health director can engage in some right now, we're looking at having that authority ruled on constitutionally as well. So Again, if anybody has any questions, thank you all for tuning in. I hope I didn't make this too long and too boring and too ridiculous. But anybody that has any questions, shoot us an email. Shoot us through one of our socials at Iron Pig Smoke. Also, again, like I said, FuelCastTV.com. Subscribe to us. We're on Locals at FuelCast TV as well. We're out there trying to bring you some independent content. Shout out to a couple of my guys that are tuning in earlier, some independent content creators. You guys are out there doing the good work, and keep it up. I appreciate the support. You guys have been amazing. We do have tons of merch that are still for sale. IronPigMerch.com. If you're looking to join our mug club, Iron Pig Mug Club right there. There's a bunch of different options, including one that has our NFT attached to it as well. We don't have time to talk about that. But thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I appreciate all the support from all of us here at the Iron Pig. We love you. Enjoy yourselves. Have a nice evening. Hit record on this debate that's coming up, because I'm sure it's probably going to be a doozy. Thank you, guys.